The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your
settles
soul.
In your soul.
It does.
Totally settles in your soul.
Man.
I want it to be a way of life at more than Shasta County.
No doubt.
Hey, everybody. Terry Raposa, Wynn Carpenter.
Hey, how are you?
The First Lady of Jefferson, Janet Chandler.
Present and accounted for.
Dave, a.k.a. Backward Hat Man.
Good morning.
All right. We're all ready to go here. We have a very exciting show. Mm-hmm. We're going to be on for 2 hours today. Our friend Mark Kent will be coming in at 11, but we're going to be on for 2 hours. We've got some really important stuff to talk about. And I think we're all tired of corruption, and we've heard a lot of that. And talking about corruption, our first guest, Mark Baird. How are you, my friend?
He's not corrupted. Are you there, Mark?
Are you there?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, there you are.
Yeah, you're not corrupt. You're fighting corruption.
There you go.
Tell us how you're fighting corruption, and also give us an update on your court case, sir.
How I'm fighting corruption, yeah. Well, I'm fighting corruption because I'm trying to get some liberty restored to Californians in a federal court that's obviously run by the Democrat Party of California. And that's a big fight that we all ought to know we're losing. I mean, courts steal your liberty every day, especially in California. And if you don't fight that, if you don't change the way you vote, we're never going to win. The Second Amendment court case is back in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Fortunately, God has blessed us with the same panel we had before when we got a unanimous decision out of the Ninth Circuit, with two Trump appointees and one Bush appointee. And it has yet to be calendared. I've done some research to the degree that an ordinary person can get a look at the court, which I have to say is very, very limited. And I have discovered that it's not out of the ordinary for the Ninth Circuit to take 9, 10, or even 11 months to just put a case on the calendar. That's all they need to do right now is put the case on the calendar. The panel's already been selected. They retain jurisdiction of the case, but it has yet to be calendared, so I don't know what date the oral arguments will occur, nor what the briefing schedule is for it yet. However, we do expect that to come.
Hey, Mark, where are you in that calendar time frame?
Well, I mean, we're right at 8 months now. It's been in front of the court for 8 months, and they have yet to put it on the calendar.
No, there you go. You're narrowing in on the gap there, I guess, a little bit then. Maybe within the next 2 months, maybe something would be known?
Yeah, within the next 2 months, something may be known. You know, isn't that crazy? I mean, you know, this case has been going on for years and years. I think, 7, 8 years now. And we're still waiting for the case to be heard in front of a panel of judges that already have jurisdiction over the case.
Justice delayed is justice denied.
Which is kind of funny because that's the saying that's on the outside of the courthouse.
Yeah, right on the steps, right on the sidewalk, right up to the courthouse,
and on the wall inside too.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
but it's typical of Democrats because they typically ignore the policies that they say they champion.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, old Camilla Harris was on Saturday Night Live, but they didn't offer equal time to Donald Trump. And that's a violation of FCC rules, and I know that because we used to own radio stations. If you have a candidate on your airwaves or on your radio waves or whatever, you have to offer equal time to the other candidate. But they never did that for Trump. Now, guess what will happen over that?
Nothing.
Because it was a Democrat.
And it wasn't done in New York.
Yeah, and it's the same in Chairman Mao Newsom's California. It's the same here. And people, you know, they can't imagine that socialism and totalitarianism has come and taken over their system of government. And we have that in California. We have a monoparty of the Democratic crazy people who have stolen your children from you, stolen their education from you, stolen your Constitution from you. They've stolen your Second Amendment rights, your First Amendment rights. And yet everybody just kind of sits here and says, oh, well, I mean, well, gee, I guess there's nothing we can do about it. I'm mystified by that. I'm stumped by that. But that's why we need to break this state up. It cannot be fixed. It can't be saved. We need to break this state up, and we need to break up the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Agreed.
It's the largest circuit in the nation.
Yep.
It's obviously so unwieldy that it takes years and years and years. And what is the purpose of the court? You have to ask yourself, so that ordinary people can petition the government for redress of grievances in a legal and peaceful manner? Well, what's the point of that if it takes 20 years just to get your case heard, or you're dead before you get your case heard, or it costs millions and millions of dollars, which the ordinary person doesn't have, and the government is using your money to fight you?
Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Agreed.
Yeah, you know.
That's a question, not a statement.
Yeah, our second caller who's going to be calling in is someone who's going to be talking about that, some issues that that individual has with judges. I mean, again, it always seems that justice delayed is justice denied, but a lot of it's just justice denied. I know that in your court case that Judge Mueller has made the comment, the Constitution means what I say it means in my courtroom.
Well, it's justice denied, but it's also justice as interpreted by an individual who does not want you to have justice. I mean, they intentionally circumvent justice. They intentionally circumvent court processes. They lie about it. They lie in open court. The judge lies in open court. I mean, they lie in their briefs. This brings us back down to the term of serves during a period of good behavior. Well, shouldn't good behavior be telling the truth and upholding the law as it is written by others? In other words, judges don't write law. Judges don't make law. They simply interpret laws that are already written. And when you have a law that's written in black and white in plain English, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and the Supreme Court of the land has upheld that 3, 4, 5 times now, and yet you have a circuit court that just acts as though they never even spoke, is that justice, really? Is that good behavior? And my answer is no.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that's what I know.
Short and sweet.
Yeah, we'll be having a four-part video coming out very shortly through Mountaintop Media.
Yep.
You probably can see it right now on Facebook, I've been told.
Yep, you can.
We will be having that coming out. We'll be sending that out to a lot of people. Check Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E, Jefferson State of Mind. If you go to Facebook and search engine that, Jefferson State of Mind, the podcast, it'll pop right up.
Look.
You can also go to Rumble. Again, Jefferson State of Mind, that podcast will pop up. Anyway, go ahead,
Mark. One last thing.
Sure.
One last thing.
Sure.
Vote. Vote. Christian gun owners, not only vote, but if you have friends that don't vote or that are, you know, don't think voting matters, get them to vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain. So
there's
vote.
Isn't that the truth?
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
And after you have voted, you can track your vote on CaliforniaBallotTracks.net. And that's tracks with an S.
Say that again. Say that website again, please.
CaliforniaBallotTracks.net. And it's tracks with an X.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. That's important.
Well, thank you, Janet.
Well, Mark, we just found out. Are you still there or did you go?
No, I'm here.
Okay, good, because you can go a little longer if you want. We just found out our caller is ill, and she's not able to call in. So,
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah. So getting back to the court case, you know, we know that it's been moving slowly, but I want to talk a little bit about state split. I want to talk a little bit about that and the idea of doing it by initiative, which I believe is a consensus that we're beginning to come to, and the idea of having it be more than just a state split in half, but maybe three states or four states. I want you to elaborate a little bit on that, would you please?
Well, I think that the only way to restore liberty in the entire state of California is to break up into smaller governmental units where each unit actually represents the people who live there. And what we have now, we have a situation in California where in the ratio of representation to the population, California is the worst state in the union, 400% worse than the next state, which is Texas, at 1 million people per state senator and 500,000 people per assembly person. And in addition to that, because of the Baker versus Carr, Gray versus Sanders, and Reynolds versus Sims cases, and this crazy concept of the one man, one vote thing, and counties don't deserve their own representation deal, 51% of the representation lies from the Los Angeles County line south to the Mexican border. So you have a state that takes 10, 12 hours to drive from one end to the other, and the people in the southern third of the state pipe the tune for everybody else. And the logical progression of that, the logical conclusion of that is we pay more for gasoline than any state in the union, like in some cases $2 a gallon more than the neighboring states do. We have the highest taxes, worst economy, 1 million people left California, tens of thousands of businesses are leaving, and the most popular thing to talk about in California is where are you moving to? Our children have left. They have no jobs in the rural resource counties. There are no jobs here. Our kids leave. They're never coming back. Most of the time, they move out of state because there's no opportunity here. The idiots in Sacramento, led by that lying criminal Gavin Newsom, are absolutely horrible, and there's a trail of blood that leads right to his office from illegal alien crime, murdering, robbing, looting, and swindling California residents, and then in exchange for that privilege, he spends $27 billion a year giving illegal aliens free stuff, and he only spends $2 billion a year on veterans. Well, look, there's only one answer to that. We have a monoparty in California. We have a very weak little shell of a Republican Party left. It's very small. And the only answer to that is to break the state up so that people have an actual say over what happens to them in their own homes, in their own counties, in their own areas. And we have tried that in court. And once again, Judge Mueller, the Democratic hack who works for the Democratic Party, who was a Democratic city councilman in the city of Sacramento and so on, she for the very first time in the history of an appellate court, made a ruling to impanel a three-judge panel, which was her duty and her responsibility in a voter dilution case. And then 3 days later, after she had an illicit conversation with someone who wasn't briefed on the case in court, she reversed her own ruling. In other words, she opinioned against herself and changed her mind and dismissed the case for lack of standing, saying, yes, you don't have any representation in California, but since nobody has adequate representation in California, the court can't help you. I mean, it's the first time in the history of a court that a judge reversed their own opinion and then went an opposite direction. They outspent us. She knew that. They delayed. The case went on for years and years and years. We never, ever had a hearing in the case on the merits. Never did. And that, to me, is a travesty of justice by the Democratic Party in California, the socialist, fascist party of California. And the only answer for us is to get the voters involved and to break this state up into at least three parts. I think that geographically, that's kind of how it has to work. And so that people in those areas can decide what form of government they choose to live under. And for us, it will be a government that guarantees our liberty.
And what kind of coincidence was it that this very same judge was assigned to your Second Amendment case after having done you dirty on the representation case?
Well, it's not the first time I've seen Judge Mueller, that's for sure, but she now is the chief magistrate of California's Eastern District, by the way. Oh, goody.
Well, that was her reward.
A lot of opening cases go through Judge Mueller. She then decides how the Democrat Party would like to see that case settled, and she does it. I mean, there is no rule of law in the courts in California. There is none. We have to restore liberty. The people must do that. No one else is going to do that for us. And if you're looking to the court to restore your liberty, you're making a mistake.
Sad. So what would be a benefit of getting out from under all this? Having your own new state. Everything you just mentioned would go away.
Yeah, I mean, how much time do you have?
I know. That's where we're at. Like, the benefits would be enormous. And how people could not support it is unfathomable to me.
Look, the worst day we could possibly have in the northern third of California would be our last day as Californians.
Amen, brother.
The very next day we could restore our economy, we could lower energy prices, we could lower inflation, we could encourage job growth, we could encourage people to stay in their own state, we can encourage children to return to the place where they grew up and were born and bring their families with them. I mean, there is no downside to doing this. And the upside is a potential recovery of liberty and economy and freedom and a way of life that we used to enjoy many decades ago in the state of California. And we're in a position to restore that. And with the Constitution that we've already written, we could restore liberty for 100 generations.
Mark, when you talk about a state split, do you have any preconceived notions of where the split would take place, which counties would be in which areas, or is that to be determined later?
Well, I think, I, of course, have something in my head, but that's just me, and I'm certainly not the king here. So, I assume that it would be about in three equal parts. I mean, one-third of Northern California and the middle third, and then the southern third would be from about Kern County South or Los Angeles County South. So, I mean, I think that geographically and politically, we have to have some sort of like-mindedness among the people who live here. And it's not to say that we have to be of one stripe. I mean, certainly in the third of Northern California that would be our state, there are communities that are very liberal and there are communities that are very conservative. But at least we're close enough together that we can go have dialogues with those people. And our representation would be close enough and small enough that it would represent the people's wishes and not their own wishes. I mean, now, when you look at it now, if you have a state senator that represents 11 counties, well, what if a county that has a lot of money and a lot of population wants something that's diametrically opposed to a county that has very little population and doesn't want the same thing? Who's going to win that? Well, of course, the money will, and the population.
If we get our state split, would we still have a problem with having one state senator per county because of the previous Supreme Court rulings?
No, absolutely not, because there is no constitutional prohibition to having a state senator for each county or multiples of one, in other words, 2, 4, 6, 8, whatever you want. Whatever we determine in our Constitution, if you want two state senators per county, there's nothing wrong with that either. And perhaps you might achieve balance that way in your own mind, one liberal, one conservative from each county, whatever the people of the new state want. But those politicians would be close enough with small enough districts that it would not be unfeasible to get rid of a bum or a crook if you happen to elect one. And the way it is now in California, 97% of the time you never get rid of an incumbent because it costs too much money. Well, if you had a district that had, say, 10 or 20,000 people per representative and one state senator per county or two state senators per county, it doesn't matter which, then it is not out of the realm of the believable to get rid of these people if they don't do the job you hired them to do. And it would not be inconceivable for groups of citizens to band together and form committees to activate political movements that could field a viable candidate, and it wouldn't cost millions and millions of dollars to do it. When you look at political campaigns in New Hampshire and Vermont, they're very cheap because the districts are small, 3,200 people in New Hampshire. Well, it's not out of the ordinary for a group of citizens to dislike an incumbent and to gather enough political support among 3,200 of their fellow citizens to get rid of the guy or gal, whoever it is. And we don't have that in California. You never get rid of these bums once they get elected. And they travel from the Assembly to the Senate, and you never get rid of them. They're like bad pennies. And then when they finally do retire, they leave the horrible mess they left this state in, and they walk away as though they'd never done anything in their lives.
Do you have a practical number ratio for representation that you would like to see in the split states?
Well, I personally would like to see one for 5,000. Now, that may be unmanageable in counties that have a lot of people, like millions and millions of people. But I would say no more than one for 15,000. I think if you limit that to 15,000, it is not out of reach for people to form committees to begin political movements to get rid of these bums.
And remind us what they are now.
That's one for a million in the state Senate and one for half a million in the Assembly.
So anything would be an improvement.
Anything would be an improvement, but if you're going to make an improvement that does make a difference. And that would be, you know, one for 5, 10, or 15,000, no more than 15,000. I think 15,000 is probably the outer limit of where it would be practical to be able to start a campaign and maybe get a guy unelected and replace him with a better candidate. Just by ordinary citizens using the money that ordinary citizens have the ability to raise.
Yeah.
Great plan.
Yeah. You know, and that's stuff,
and the smaller,
that's,
and really the smaller the better. And
yeah.
The other aspect of that is, you know, I just read last night where I think California has already gotten 890 new laws this year. You know, none of which are designed to restore your liberty or your money to you. They're all designed to take something else from you. But why do we need these bums to work 5 days a week, 12 months a year? I mean, a part-time legislature in a smaller state, a part-time legislature that works a month or two a year is more than enough to serve the people. Any more than that, they're serving themselves. And they're sucking on the government nickel to try to get as much as they can out of it.
I think they're sucking on more than the nickel. The nickel.
Yeah.
The nickel, you said, with a K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicole,
yeah.
Yeah. We are on public radio.
Yeah, know, we are.
We don't want to say other words.
Dave's looking at me smiling. Our producer's smiling at me. We can say whatever we want on a podcast, brother. You'd have fun with that.
But in addition to that, what do you need to accomplish that couldn't be accomplished in a month or two, a year? I mean, I think our Constitution is set up right now to where odd years would be legislative years and even years would be budget years, and we'd have a two-year budget. I mean, there is just no need for these bums and crooks to have a building in Sacramento that they dominate, and they dominate people's lives 12 months a year, and you wake up every single morning asking yourself, what is the government going to do to me today?
Yeah.
Sad but true.
And if you doubt that's true, go find out how much a U-Haul truck costs to go to Texas, and then call a Texas U-Haul and find out how much a U-Haul truck costs to go to California.
And none of those 890 laws passed in California this year returned our liberty to us.
Not a one. Not one single one. And in fact, they're stripping your, not only your liberty, but even your choices. I mean, you can't have a gasoline-powered lawn implement.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, the last one just sold it, right?
Yeah, you can't have a gasoline-powered chainsaw in California anymore.
Right.
Oh, please. I mean, how stupid. What are you doing most of your day when the best you can come up with is some stupidity like that?
Yep.
And I mean, now, I just read where the Valero refinery in California got fined billions of dollars because they, they fail to put something in gasoline, or they fail to take something out of gasoline, I don't know, something like that, that they probably don't do in any other state. Chevron is leaving Richmond. They're going to Texas. They've had enough. I mean, their potential settlement with the state of California of remaining in business here was in the billions.
Yep.
Well, they said, oh, okay, well, see ya. You know?
Yep.
And they're moving to a place where economically they can have a little more freedom to run their own business.
Right.
You know, you have a governor in the state of California that he pretends he knows enough about oil to tell oil companies how to do their business. And then he pretends he knows enough about the climate to tell you how to do your business. Well, you better have an extension cord if you got more than a normal size lawn, because you can't mow your lawn. Oh, and don't run over it with your electric lawnmower. I mean, these things are so stupid and patently ridiculous. He's telling the school when they can take your children away from you.
Right.
Take your children. Think about that for a second. The public school system can take your children from you. What kind of world do we live in? Mao Zedong, I don't think, even did that in China.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we have to go off to our break here. We've got our half-hour break. If you want to hang on with us and listen in, that'd be great, Mark.
Sure.
Patrick Jones is here, his wife, Lori. And we're going to talk more politics and what's going on locally here after the break. So time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights. Don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51. In a Jefferson state of mind.
Reading businesses, listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
Oh, I wanted you to turn it up. That's, yeah. Yeah. Give us a little look at that. We got lots of time today.
I'll have to get that mic ready. That one. I'll have to change the thing.
We're just free and easy out here, folks. You
whenever you're ready, there, Terry. We're not all that way.
Boy, have this for serious here. Hey, everybody. We are back here with Wynn Carpenter.
Good morning.
The First Lady of Jefferson.
Janet Chandler.
Are you sure?
The last time I looked at my birth certificate.
Well,
but
no,
it's a
you're
pretty...
the First Lady of Jefferson. You have no more name anymore.
Oh, that's it. Well,
First Lady, that's it.
But once you get to be my age, how many birth certificates do I need? You know.
Well, it depends on what you're running for. And we are here with Lori Jones. How are you, Lori?
Marvelous.
And last but not least.
I'm Ken Murray, and I'm not using drugs anymore.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, careful. His friends have had endorsements on him, right?
When I was running back in 2002 and 2004, he was running in 2004, and he'd always come on talking about his drug addiction and all these different that he took every drug that there was, and I was kind of getting tired of listening to that. So one day I come on and I said, you know, I'm Ken Murray and I'm not using drugs anymore. So it was funny at the time, and I think it's still funny. But it's not funny. The drugs are in our community worse now than ever, and we're going to have a special meeting on the 12th to talk about some of that. So
tell us about that.
So we do have a special meeting. So the next meeting that comes up, I mean, obviously the election, the selection is happening next Tuesday. So after the selection process, we will be having a board of supervisors meeting on the 7th, which is a Thursday, and it's a night meeting at 5:30. The following week, we didn't have a meeting scheduled, but we now have a special meeting on the 12th, which is Tuesday, and that's 9 a.m. at 1450 Court Street. And that solely only issue on that agenda is the opioid settlement money and how would we like to spend it. So that's coming up. And then the 14th, the following week, that's a Thursday, and that's also at 5:30. We have another night meeting. That's a regularly scheduled night meeting. The agenda obviously is not out for that. The agenda is out for the night meeting on the 7th, and that's why I'm here today to talk about R5 and R6, which I sponsored those and put those on the agenda. And R5, we'll start with R5 first. And so that's for one of my most favorite organizations in the whole wide world, and that's CTCL, the Centers for Tech and Civic Life. And that's been in the news recently. That is Mark Zuckerberg. You know, he is the second wealthiest person, I think, in the world, somewhere over $100 billion net worth. And he has put in to elections over $400 million. And I believe 29 states have banned that type of influence peddling, because obviously you're not giving that kind of money for no reason.
Right.
And it obviously has implications as to what you could do with it. And there were plenty of strings with those conditions that they had. He recently, under oath, testified that he regrets that the money was used for partisan politics and things that he said they weren't going to be used for. And of course, you know, he doesn't regret that. And I've talked about this before. He was smart to say that he regretted that, obviously, because he's under oath. And the monies obviously were designed to help certain demographics get out the vote.
Right.
And in fact, if you go back to our minutes from... This was a Tuesday meeting, February 28th, 2023, when I was chair. In response to questions by Supervisor Rickert, our ROV, Ms. Allen, explained that the grant funding could not be used to supplement regular budgetary fundings and needed to be used for election administration and related costs. She stated that she felt the funding was nonpartisan, and she went on to say that she summarized that the funds would be spent in specific infrastructure needs, not in any attempt to influence any election. But that's exactly what Zuckerberg under oath said was happening. And so here our ROV is telling us one thing. Now, the vote came, and I made the motion to not accept this. So if we back up to that month, February of 2023, several months prior, I think in December 2022, staff had been notified that they were awarded the $1.5 million with certain strings attached, and we'll get into those strings. There were basically 12 basic conditions. They did not inform the board in December. or in January, but in February it was placed as R3 on the agenda to approve a grant for the CTCL for $1.5 million. And so obviously that got my attention. I'm very familiar with Mark Zuckerberg and his left-leaning politics. And so we had a discussion, so I made a motion. I made a motion to not accept these funds and to refuse the grant. It was seconded by Supervisor Kellstrom. That failed 3-2. So Supervisor Cry made a substitute motion, and he was very clear on that substitute motion. He said, I'm going to make a substitute motion to direct staff to draw up, to draw up a counterproposal with language stating that the only use of the $1.5 million in grant funding would be to purchase real property or to build a new building for the elections to departments, and to strike out the ability for the CTCL to have sole discretion to request the return of the grant funds. It was seconded, and it was passed 3-2. So that is the substantive motion that should have gone forward to the CTCL. Now, therein lies the problem. When we get to that proposal, and that was proposal number 12. Let's see where it is. Here we go. So that was the language that should have been in there, but unfortunately, they left this language in. The CT, and this was the 12th condition, which the substitute motion should have been in that position. The CTCL may discontinue, modified, withhold part of, or ask for the return of all or part of the grant funds if it determines in its sole judgment that the CTCL is required to do so. So that's what was sent forward to the CTCL without right. authorization.
Right.
By who?
So there we go. So so how did that happen? How did we make a 3-2 vote and a counterproposal, and staff had that? Now, who was staff? Well, staff was our acting CEO, Mary Williams. Our staff was County Council Ruben Cruz, our ROV Allen, and assistant ROV Joanna Francesca. So those were the staff and that were dealing with this. Now, so the plot thickens a little bit. So that was late February. So I assumed our counterproposal, and I was chair, was sent forward. Now, I really didn't think that they would approve it, because I don't think that Section 12, they would have liked that language, right? They were very clear. So in March, I asked our acting CEO, Mary Williams, did that counterproposal, did they approve it? And she said, I haven't seen it. So I asked it again 2 months later, that, hey, did that counterproposal come in? And she said, no, it had not. And so I assumed that they were not going to approve it, and maybe they wouldn't even send a letter saying we're denying your request due to condition number 12. So the whole entire year went by unaware that any grant was approved.
You guys were unaware.
We were unaware, right, of it, which is the entire board.
Right.
And so this information was kept away from me as the chair and from the entire board by these individuals that I've stated earlier.
Right.
And so the reality was they rewrote it in the way that I described. They sent it forward, and it was approved the following month.
The people that you mentioned rewrote it?
They rewrote it. Okay. So, and we have, I have a stack of 174 emails, and what it talks about, Joanna Francisco, for example, here's one from Jim Ross, and it's addressed to Kathy and Joanna. And it says, in order to respond to Joanna's request whether the CTCL agreement could be executed without going back to the board, I went back to the recording and listened to every word. Now, so Jim Ross was very familiar with this. He listened to every word. It was very clear from the minutes what every word was. So everybody knew what was supposed to be done, but he went back, listened to it again, so he knew exactly what happened. Now, here's another email from Kathy saying, Jim, apologies. So the removal of sole isn't enough. We need to remove the entire phrase in its sole judgment in order to not go back to the board, yes? And then Jim comes on. And he says, you know, to Joanna and to Kathy, the answer to that question might vary on whether they accept the revised language, which is the board. So 10 times throughout this document, Jim Ross comes on and he says, in order to respond, we're going to need to go back to the board 10 times. He says that. It never gets done. And Joanna and Kathy and Jim Ross and Mary Williams were all aware of this, so they simply just wrote it the way they wanted to and sent it forward. And so that brings us today. So it's on the agenda, and that's R5. And it says no vote, but there is going to be, I guarantee you, I will make a motion to bring this back for discipline actions for the parties involved.
What would be that discipline, do you think?
I think it's beheading.
public beheading?
Okay, you've given up on the stoning part of it. Okay.
I'm not an attorney. We'll have to see what kind of discipline. Some of these people are still with the county. One is, the others are not. And there was resignations from Jim Ross right after this. Possibly because of this. Could he be disbarred over this? Quite possible. He works on behalf of the board, and withholding this type of information from the board could lead to that. Acting CEO Mary Williams, who's now with the Children's Legacy Center or whatever name they
just have. Just got a raise, I saw.
Yeah.
Substantial.
Big raise. She's not with the county. What could be done there? Kathy Allen has retired, leaving only Joanna left, and she did this as a county employee. She was not acting ROV at the time these documents occurred.
Is our present ROV officer aware of this situation?
He is aware, yes. Now, and he'll be more aware now. When this comes up on the agenda for the 7th, I doubt ROV Toller will be present. Obviously, he's got an election to run or a selection to run, and that's going to take probably the entire month of November and probably into December.
Is that a night meeting?
That is a night meeting. This will be on a night meeting.
Night meeting, 5:30.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And so he is very aware of it. In his defense, I will say that he wasn't around during this time, and I don't think he would have done this type of activity. I do believe I have more faith in him than that. So this is pretty disturbing that, you know, we have solid proof of some misconduct going on that can be easily documented in these documents, these emails, the minutes. All those things are pretty clear what they did and how they did it. Now, interestingly, you know, by not allowing this information to come to the board, you fast forward to 2024, and then on an agenda, they say all of a sudden, hey, we've got this grant, and it's time sensitive. You know, we've got to spend it by December of 2024.
Wow.
You know, at the end of the year, December of this year. And it's like, what grant? What grant is so sensitive, right?
Yeah.
And again, we had a new CEO, a new county council, and so I'm pretty sure at that time they weren't aware of what had occurred, and neither were we, because nobody knew. So this information was being withheld from some of our new executive officers and legal counsel, and so, you know, here they're looking at it and saying, well, you know, we got to do something with it, and we want to use the money to buy these machines. We could technically use this money to pay for those heart machines. So in essence, that's what the board did with that, and, you know, bought the heart machine. So they didn't end up costing the taxpayers anything. They cost Zuckerberg some money, but, you know, we were forced.
Can you repeat that? Because there's been so much flack about it. Repeat what you just said.
Yeah, and so, you know, the heart machines that we bought that are working so wonderful today for $950,000.
Right.
So we used this Zuckerbucks money to purchase that. So that money then did not come from the general fund. Zuckerberg money is not taxpayers' money, and it was, so it paid for these wonderful heart machines. I would personally like to send these heart machines back to Heart for a refund. They're not working very well right now, and as you know, we have a serious issue with Runbeck. Runbeck is the folks out of Arizona that produce our ballot, there is apparently an overspray issue on the...
That you can't see.
I've seen it.
I guess it can't be picked up, though.
You use a magnifying glass, and you take a look at the barcode, and the edge of the barcode line is a little bit fuzzy. Is it enough that the machine can't count it? I couldn't tell you that. I can't.
That's the claim, though.
That is what is being said.
That's the claim.
I wouldn't necessarily hang my hat completely on that.
Now, those are being created down in Arizona, and that's in Maricopa County, isn't it?
Well, it's, and we know about that county, and of course, Runbeck's been under investigation before, and they'll probably be under investigation on this. A couple weeks ago, we did the accuracy and logic test. I went down there, and they didn't have any troubles then, but then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. when the actual ballots arrive, they start running them through, and so...
currently, when they have even batches of 50... it's extremely high rejection rate, lots over like 40 to 90%.
Wow. Yeah, and so what they're doing, so manually now, if you go down there, and here's another concern, you know, that's just poor policy, and I've talked to the ROV about this, but there is one gal handling ballots. And there's several tables, but the person handling the ballot is a single person with one set of eyes. And they're determining whether the ballot is good, and they're stacking it this way, and it's bad, they stack it this way. And then once the bad ones are, or once the good ones are weeded out and stored, then they're taking the rejected ballots, and then Runbeck has come down with a special machine in another room, and is going to duplicate that ballot. That bad ballot will be duplicated, and I'm sure that will go flawlessly. And so the likelihood that more than half of the ballots that are out there are going to have to be are being duplicated for whatever reason they say they're being duplicated, and so we have to trust this process. So it's just bad on top of bad. And we're also hearing out there that Dominion, there are many problems with Dominions across the country as well. So
why don't we just count by hand?
Yeah, why don't we just hand count?
It'd be
cheaper, another argument.
It'd be more
that.
Efficient.
Yeah.
We would get it done in a timely fashion.
Yep.
Just count by hand.
Right.
Yep.
In this particular case, I think it really would have proven that point.
Especially if you can't pick it up with the naked eye.
This isn't going to help to restore trust with the voters at all.
Yeah, Wynn just made a good point. If you can't pick it up with the naked eye, how do you know?
Right. Well, and the thing is, eye isn't going to be looking
insane.
At barcodes. We're going to be looking at the choices, the selections on the ballot.
Now, I just want to reiterate to our listeners, we're going to be on through 11 o'clock. So at 10 o'clock, we have a hard break for the news. But if you have a question or a comment, the phone number is 605-4567, 530-605-4567. Go ahead, Pat.
And so since we're talking about the Hart Civic machines and how wonderful they are and accurate that they are, so then we come to R6. And again, this is coming up for the next agenda on the 7th, and that's a night meeting. R6, I have a discussion related to the timestamps and the audit log for the March 5th, 2024 primary. So we have a situation where during that election and slightly after that election, the Hart machines, they have a clock, a time stamp on them. And it's important to have the right time as these are counted, because that's how you duplicate your audit and you can see the history of events. Well, 20 times the clock was wrong, 22, I believe, is the exact number. And 8 times the clock was changed at 2 and 3 in the morning.
What?
And a couple times at roughly 9:30-ish in the evening. So I asked ROV Toller, I said, you know, this is disturbing because we now have a corrupted audit log that we can't track. It makes it difficult or impossible, really, to track this. And I just want an explanation, you know, from Hart or from you as to how this, you know, how we can't keep time on a very important process. And he said, well, our people are working down there all times of the night counting ballots. I said, excuse me? I said, I hope that's not the case. I hope there's not somebody in that building at 2 and 3 in the morning handling ballots, because if that were to be the case, that's illegal. You would have to have people there. It would have to be notified 24 hours in advance, and you'd have to have meaningful observation. So I said, I don't think that's the case. I said, so I'm going to ask our IT guys to give me the footage, the video footage. And so they did. And nobody in the building at night.
What so why would he say that?
He misspoke, and he did send me an email.
What?
Yes, he misspoke.
Okay, we've heard enough misspeaking by other candidates in the country right now, and that's just a flat-out lie.
It was incorrect information. I took a look at the videos. Our IT guys showed that basically these are from 8 till 6. So people would be coming in roughly at around 8 o'clock in the morning and going out at 6. You know, so that's, you know, 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Right. And nothing through the night. Nothing, nobody in there through the night. So these timestamps show they changed the evidence, the facts that we have, show that the timestamps changed when there's nobody in the building. Now, Thomas then, so that's the facts. That's what we know. That's what we have. Now, we can make we can have some opinions about that. We could say, well, the person in charge of setting those machines was having trouble, and they were getting the AM and the PM mixed up. And so that's the logical answer for that. There's no facts to that. There's no data to that. The facts are that eight times in the middle of the night or very early morning when no one was in the building, the timestamps changed. Now, also time changed. An hour back, a couple minutes, in some cases seconds, in some 12 hours or 24 hours in others.
Ooh.
And so if you were of a nefarious persuasion and you wanted to create some doubt, you would do these types of things to cover various activities. This is a possibility. And in fact, we had a gentleman, Steve Olmstead, that came to the board and dissected this information quite well. You should go back to that board meeting. It was last month. Actually, it was at an election commission meeting, and he was brought forward, very thorough. I was really impressed with him. And once again, what he shows is that you have some vulnerabilities here. Now, nationally, what's being talked about for people that have taken it seriously and have really attacked the vote cast record, you'll see where some of these problems are. There's cheating in a lot of different ways, and electronically is just one method to cheat. And the way our systems are, there's just no way. There's no way to be able to positively say that you don't have intrusion. They don't have enough stuff in place, and really the only way to have a fair election is a paper ballot, which we have,
right,
counted by hand,
yep,
at the precinct, same day. When you do those things, you're going to eliminate, I would say, 85% of the ways that they're cheating, not all the ways that they're cheating.
Why don't we add voter ID in with that as well?
But voter ID would be a good thing.
Do we have jurisdiction as a county to be able to do that?
Well, right now, I think another county had already attempted to do that, and they were shut down on that. Just as I, in January and February of 2023, passed a motion that we would end the Dominion voting machine contract and go to hand count. And of course, the state comes right around and, as you know, passes AB 969 saying, right, you can't do that. And what's interesting about that is I think there's lots of people around the world that when they saw that we did that, then they knew then that we knew what some of the problems were.
Right.
Now, from that time to today, we have gotten a lot more information about,
yeah,
what has been going on,
yeah,
a lot more. And reporters have come over from around the world, And I've asked all these reporters, I think the last one was either from Germany or the Netherlands or somewhere, maybe Uranus, I don't know. And I said, why are you here? Why would you spend money to come halfway around the world because a small county wants to hand count? And no one ever answered that question, right? They never did. But the reality is they know the problem. They know.
They want to be the one breaking the story.
Right. We have figured it out that you cannot have electronic elections, because what you're going to have is an electronic selection.
Right.
And what's at stake? Well, your country is
everything
at stake. And,
yep,
every position that's out there is selected.
Yep.
And every once in a while, they'll throw a guy like me a bone in 2020. I,
yeah,
barely eked out a win there. They didn't cheat quite enough. I should have never been there. Should have never been there. And we've been able to expose this, and others have too. Others are a lot smarter on this than me, because this electronic stuff has a lot of ways to cover it up and to disintegrate the evidence as it goes out the back door.
Well, when you're talking about them setting the time, why don't they just use military time? Done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't have the AM, PM issue to contend with. It's done. Just AM, just military time and just done.
So
we're going to have to go off here to a hard break real quick. We want to remind everybody that we are going to be on for another hour. So we're going to have Patrick Jones and Lori back with us for a little longer here. And as long as you guys want to stay. But we do have to go off to a break because it's a hard one. It's the news. And if you have a question or a comment, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, and time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
Am I the only one here tonight? Shaking my head and thinking something.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.